Okay, we're in the middle of chapter 36. And the English is page 165, 166 in the Hebrew. It's right after the note. In English, it's something of this revelation, last paragraph. In the Hebrew, it's the first narrow line, V'gam kfar hayal ilumim, is where we're up to. Everybody got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody has any questions, please stop me right away. Okay. He's talking here about, he made a statement back in chapter 33 that the world was created in order to make a dwelling place for God down here.
Yes.
That was a statement that was made. And here in chapter 36, he explains that, gives with greater elucidation by asking the question, what do you mean for God down here? Hashem wants a dwelling place in the lower realms. For Hashem, there's no such thing as lower. Hashem is not spatial. So how could Hashem desire something down here when there's no such thing as down here for Hashem? And he qualified the answer that up and down, when you're talking in spirituality, does not mean in spatial terms, but it means in terms of godly revelation. That when we say a higher world, like the world of emanation or one of those types of things, a higher realm, it means what's defined is it as higher as it having a greater amount of revelation of godliness in it. So it's like a higher level of world, as opposed to you could say like 12th grade is a higher grade than 11th grade, not because you're elevated more off the ground, but because you have to go through 11th grade to get to 12th grade on most circumstances. And it is a higher, hopefully a higher level of learning. So the word higher isn't to be taken in that instance as being in terms of up and down, but in terms of Gilui revelation. And he said that this world, when we talk about this world being a dwelling place for God, that everything else in the creation process, and we talk about the whole creation process, which is talked about throughout the Kabbalah, and he brings down through Tanya with the different worlds and the different spheres, all of that for Hashem it's called the Yerida Lefanav. It's an embarrassment for Hashem. For Hashem to create a world of emanation or create angels, these type of things, no big deal. And they're not really the purpose of creation. In fact, they're not the purpose of creation at all. They're just merely a step within the process whereby we get to three dimensions with a past, present, and future. This is where we have Hashem's essence, and it's based on the adage that where the rutzen of a person is, that's where his entirety is. Where you want to be is where you are, is what the expression is from the Baal Shem Tov. What was Hashem's will and desire? Hashem's will and desire is that he had neshamis, as it says, b'mim nimlech b'nishmaisehem shel tzadikim. Who did Hashem take counsel in to create the world? He took counsel in the souls of Israel, in the souls of the righteous. Does that mean he set up a board meeting and said, what do you think? We'll take a vote. Should I create a world? Should I not create a world? No, that's not what that means at all. Rather, it means that when Hashem thought of the idea of the Jewish soul and thought of the idea of the Torah, so then Hashem decided it would be a good thing if we put these two things into a world. And that's hence the title to the word Bereshis, base Reshis, Bara ha'olam, bara shemayim va'aretz, for two heads, for two beginnings, the Jewish people, which is called the beginning, and the Torah, which is called the beginning, was the world, heaven and earth, created. So this is where Hashem wants to be. So what does that tell us then, if we're using this adage from the Baal Shem Tov, that this is where you find the essence of Hashem? And indeed, would it be possible for us to take our tefillin or our Shabbos candles to the world of formation where you have all the angels, and to do them there, which is an impossibility, it's like a really ridiculous thing to say, but what would happen is the amount of revelation that would be present when we put on our tefillin and light our Shabbos candles would totally and completely send the world of formation into a state of nullity. The amount of godliness which is revealed when we do a mitzvah would totally and completely blow away anything that wasn't in our realm, in our sphere of existence. How come we don't get blown away then? We're only three-dimensional creatures. And the reason we don't get blown away is very simple.
We don't perceive it.
We don't see it.
We don't perceive it.
Right? What you don't see can't hurt you. It's as simple as that. Since we don't see Hashem's essence, but the essence is here regardless of if we see it or not. In fact, it's a whole deal with essences, because essence means it's not revealed. In Hebrew, the word etzem and gile are opposite. Gile means I'm revealing myself to you. Etzem is what I am for myself. What you see of me is merely the way in which I'm conveying myself to you. That's an outward expression. What I am truly is only for me. So this essence of Hashem is conveyed every time we do a mitzvah. That's why the world was created. Okay, so with that. Okay, question, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a lot of debates last month with Indian guys. Is that we have the God, like the soul world, the material world, and really everything's God.
Okay.
But there's like the levels where it's different in nature, from God to where he withdrew himself from like the infinite to create the world, where the spiritual realm, that's infinitely different in nature from the higher realm and from the material world, where our, you say we have two souls, from where higher, from where our lower soul to the actual physical realm, that's also like some kind of.
So what do you want to say?
Because everything is one, everything is God, but there's somehow a.
Yeah, but that's for sure Yechid V'Amunah. Because right now where he is, it's, in other words, your question will be dealt with a little bit later. Okay, right now what he's dealing with is yes, there is a three-dimensional concrete world. And the essence of Hashem in his infiniteness, in his absoluteness, is contained in this physical world. And this physical world can express that infiniteness of Hashem when we do mitzvahs. And mitzvahs are all done with concrete things. Physical tefillin, physical Shabbos candles, physical tzitzis, physical kosher food, etc. It has to be done with a physical thing, because that's how you convey godliness.
The mitzvah somehow transcends where that's also...
Sure, exactly. The mitzvah taps you into that infiniteness of Hashem. Okay, this will be talked about later in Shari Yochid V'Amunah. Okay. V'gam kvar ha'lo'ilumin me'ein zeh b'shas matan Torah. This idea of a dira b'tachtonim is, he says, the last line that he said before we left off, is that the ultimate revelation, expression of this is going to be Yemais HaMashiach, the Elef HaShvi, the third, the seventh, thousandth, you know, so the sixth millennia, whatever, the seventh millennia, whatever millennia you want to call it at that time. And the revelation that's going to be at the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim, when there will be no contradiction between the physical and the spiritual. And so he says, we already had this a little bit. We had a somewhat of this type of revelation at the time of Matan Torah. By the giving of the Torah, the Matan Torah is looked upon as being the greatest miracle ever wrought by the Almighty, because the forces of nature were just turned off. Nothing was working at that time. It says the birds didn't sing, and the waves didn't, the ocean didn't wave, and the sun and the stars, everything stood still while the Torah was being given. And then on top of that, people saw which was heard, and they heard which was seen, as he's going to say over here. But even more than that, how do we know that there was such a tremendous godly revelation? Moses himself says, right before he dies, in Parshas Lo Yisa Bracha, Ata haresu ladas, ki Hashem ha elokim, ein oid milvada. You were shown to know that Hashem is elokim, and there's nothing else besides him. Now he's going to take the haresu mamash b'riya chushith, that's shown with actual physical sight. People saw Hashem. And he's going to say later on, they got totally, completely flipped out. Now, when Moshe wants to convey this verse, he doesn't go into this verse now. He will later, sort of. The word ladas, it says to know. We've talked about this before. That when we say, I believe in God. So we don't say, I believe that there is a God. Because we don't believe in that there is a God. We know there is a God. You can sit down and you can figure out, we've talked about this before, yeah? Okay. You can sit down and you can figure it out that everything had to come from someplace, then it must have been Hashem. So Hashem is, as Rambam defines, is the first cause. We were talking about this before. Hashem is the first cause, as Rambam says. And if there's anything that came second, like here we are, it had to come from something first. So that's not what we believe. We don't believe that there is a God. What we believe, and he wants to say even to Ladask, Hashem hu Elokim. What's Elokim? We talked about this last week. That Elokim is the numerical value of the word nature, hateva. And what is nature? Nature is a garment for Hashem. Hashem, Yudkei Vavkei, is a creative aspect of Hashem. The tool which Hashem actually used for creating, making a creation, is Elokim. That's why you'll find in the first chapter of Bereishis and the whole Genesis story, the only name which is mentioned is Elokim. Because that's a Bereishis Bara Elokim. Elokim did the Bara. The exact involvement with the creation was specifically through the name Elokim. It's a tool. Nature is a tool that which by which Hashem manifests himself. We talked about this at great length. And that now is also something that Moshe says you can know. Know means that you can see it, like you can see it physically almost. You have such a great perception of it and a feeling of its rightness that it's though it's right in front of you and you can touch it. Because if you think about it, you have a natural phenomena. Sunrise. Sunrise on July, what's today? July 18th. July 18th in Detroit was 6:09 a.m. Daylight savings time. Last year, sunrise on July 18th in Detroit was 6:09. Next year, sunrise in Detroit on July 18th will be 6:09. We call that natural because we can predict it. But what could be more of a greater sign of divine providence, of Hashem's involvement? Because what has to happen with all of the different planets and the alignments with the sun and everything that we have a sunrise going on at exactly the same moment every single year? If you were to stop for 1 second and think about it, you'd have to say there's got to be something in control. It can't be left up to random chance that sunrise would be so predictable every single day. And you could do this with any of the other forces of nature, that how could it possibly be, it's an extra Kaddish, don't worry about it. He missed Mincha. So, all these natural phenomena really are just amazing when you think about it, that they just can't happen by happenstance. It's an impossibility. And what do we call it? We call it nature. What's nature? Nature we defined already as Elohim. So Moshe says you were shown that Hashem, which is higher than nature, is really what is enclosed in nature. To such an extent that you can see, for example, so who was shown this? The Jewish people. What's the ramifications thereof? That a Jew can work 6 days and make more money than he did than he would if he worked 7 days. So now our nature becomes Yudke Vavke. Because that doesn't make any sense. The laws of nature would say, if you're going to work 6 days, you're going to make X amount of dollars. You're going to work 7 days, you're going to work X plus 15%. But for a Jew, it doesn't work that way. And the fact that there's even our ability to, our being here, even. The fact that we've survived how many millennia of living in Europe, for example, in Arab countries, and we can still identify ourselves as Jews and connected to the Torah that was given 3,300 years ago, can only be something that's not based on nature. Because any other people would have disappeared a long time ago.
Far greater civilizations.
have vanished in the course of the last 3,300 years than ours, yes.
Absolutely right.
So we were shown that Hashem is Elohim, but then he says one thing else. Ein Eid Milvadi, which is what he really goes on and goes into in the beginning of Shar Yehud V'Amuna, as Mr. Kaufman wanted to say, that
there's no other realm.
There is nothing else besides Hashem.
Right.
You want to say, okay, if you're going to analyze it, the Hashem is infinite, and in order for Hashem to be in order for there to become a world, so that it has to be the infinity has to be contained. So what can contain Hashem's infiniteness? Only Hashem can contain Hashem's infiniteness. So the world is really nothing more than just manifest godliness, and there really is nothing else. And if we could peel back, if we could look really close, go past electron microscopes and see past the subatomic particles and get way down into it, you would actually see that the world is made out of godliness, if we could do such a thing. So you know, there is nothing else besides Hashem. So he says, Haresa mamash b'riyachushes, ki d'ksiv kol ha'amroyim es ha'koilus. It says the people saw the voices. Reinas ha'nishma, they saw what was heard. Upirish rizal, mistalka l'mizrach ha'shomein es ha'dibar yaitse ha'naychi. They looked east, and they heard the voice, and they gazed, and they saw, they heard the utterance, I'm Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. V'kein la'arbaruchos l'mayel l'amata, ki d'pirusha b'takunim. And also, they didn't have to look just to the east. They looked in all the different directions. The voice was coming from around them and up and down. There was no place that was not talking to them. That means, what was it that was revealed when Hashem revealed himself at Har Sinai? Was his divine will. And it was manifest in the Ten Commandments. As we know that the allegory that the Ten Commandments have 620 letters in them. The 620 letters correspond to the 613 commandments of the Torah and the seven commandments of the Rabbanan. But 620 is the numerical value of the word keser, crown, which is divine will. So the Ten Commandments express the totality of the divine will. That what is the Torah? The Torah is the inner will and will of Hashem. You want to know what Hashem wants? Very easy. Open up the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And that'll tell you what Hashem wants. It sounds very trite, just the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and the answer is, this is what Hashem wants. If we're here in order to make a dira b'tachtanim, then every step of that divine will is an intrinsic cog. Whether you tie your left shoe first, or your right shoe first, you know, all of these things are there because this is the divine will, and this is how the job is going to get done of making this physical course, apparently ungodly, Chas V'Shalom world, godly. And where is it? It's in the details, because that's where Hashem's will is. Is Hashem a micromanager? Yes. Hashem OCD? Borderline. Codependent? Yeah, I would say Hashem.
Borderline? There are no borders.
There's no borders.
There are no borders, man.
Is Hashem displaying codependent tendencies? Am I saying he's got to have us do it? I can't do it without you. What does that say? Hashem's codependent. We got to get some spiritual Zolof over here going. And I guess that is. It's us doing the mitzvahs, you know. So. Ve'ein sham hester panim klal. And when a person is doing the mitzvahs of Hashem, there is no concealment whatsoever. But again, I said, I don't see it. I put on tefillin this morning. I took them off. I'm pretty much sure I'm the same person I was yesterday. So, but the answer is no, I'm not.
In fact, no, yes. That's correct.
Okay. In Judaism, if the tree falls in the forest and no one heard it fall, Did it make a noise?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because just because you didn't hear it doesn't mean it didn't make a noise. It made a noise, absolutely. It's one of the stupidest philosophical questions I've ever heard. Leave it to epistemologists. Anyway, if a revelation of godliness happens and you didn't see it, does that mean it didn't happen? Of course, it happened. Are you going to be affected by it? Yes. How much? More than that tree falling in the forest that you didn't hear.
Indeed, yes.
Okay, because there was some air that was pushed. You know, the Zen example of the butterfly flapping, causing a tsunami, you know. So, there were some vibrations that were created by the tree falling, and it did have some kind of effect in the world. And how would it affect you? Very little. But I guarantee every time somebody does a mitzvah, it affects us in a tremendous way. Because we're talking revelation, we're not just talking a few sound waves pushing through the air. We're talking godliness coming in full force with Hashem's essential will. With every single thing that a person does, they're making the world less three-dimensional. Say it every single day. By the light of your face, you give us the Torah of life. Meaning that every time a person is engaged in the Torah of life, what are they getting? Or panecha, the light of Hashem's face, the inner aspect of Hashem's life. That's why at the giving of the Torah, when they were privileged actually to what we get every single time we do a mitzvah, what happened to them? Because they saw it. They went out of their boxes. Every time Hashem spoke, their souls flew out of their bodies. Because it was such a tremendous force of revelation that the example is given of a match that you put near a torch. There is a natural physical tendency for the match to be drawn into the bigger flame. So our soul is called Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The candle, the flame of God, is the soul of man. And when the torch of godliness, in this case the bonfire of godliness, was revealed at Sinai, so our souls, which are these little tiny matches, just got totally and completely sucked into it. We didn't have a choice in the matter. Ella shachzir HaKadosh Baruch Hu lehen b'tal sha'asid l'hachiyas b'yas ha'meisim v'hu tal teir sh'nikra oiz. What happened, so how come we're still here, is because Hashem did what I guess you'd call a resurrection. Because when somebody's soul flies out of their body, what do you call them?
Dead.
You call them dead. And their bodies were actually blown away from the mountain 12 kilometers.
Right.
So Hashem had to pick their bodies up, put them back to the mountain, stuff their souls back into their bodies,
yes,
and then go with the second time, and the same thing happened. It says, but what did he enliven them with? He enlivened them with the dew of Torah. What's the dew of Torah? The dew of Torah, what's dew? It says that your crops won't grow if you don't have dew. You could have rain all over the place. But if you don't get the dew, providing this, like, yeah, I don't know what dew actually does, but dew does. But if you don't have it, the crops aren't going to work. The dew of the Torah is the inner part of the Torah, the most inner part of the Torah. We call it, ready for this? Chassidus. Okay, what was it that got the Jewish people? Because listen, if my soul just flew out, think if you were there, this is a what-if situation. What if you had been at Sinai and your soul had flown out of your body, and Hashem says, okay, let's stick you back in your body. And you say, you know what? I'm good right the way I am.
Yeah, yeah.
I got the revelation going on over here. There's really nothing that it's attracting me to go back into my body. What do I need it for?
It's not like it flew away to Long Island.
Right.
It attracted.
Nor did it dissipate.
No, it went dissipated. To Hashem.
It went back to Hashem, and an ultimate connection to Hashem.
So why do I want to leave?
Exactly. So how did Hashem slide the soul back into the body en masse? He said, here's some chassidus for you. And when the neshama saw chassidus, and they said, he'll say, yep, I'm only going to give you the chassidus if you're going back in the body. And he went, oh, that was the carrot that did it. Okay. And that's what's going to be. But that's what's going to be. You have all these souls sitting in Gan Eden for thousands of years already. And how is Mashiach going to get them all back into their bodies? He's going to go, hey, you want to hear something really cool? Listen to this. But you can only listen if you got ears. You know, the neshamas don't have ears.
Right.
Okay? So all the neshamas are going to say, wait a minute, I want to hear this. And they're going to go back into their bodies. Elohech Zira HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'tal Teir, Shaz Lachos was amazing. V'hu Tal Teir, Shenikra Ois. K'may Merizal, Kol Ha'isik B'Teir, Tal Teir Mechayehu. As it says, anybody who occupies in Torah, the dew of Torah enlivens him. There's a statement in the Gemara, I forget where the bracha, the Gemara is. I think I want to say Gemara Brachas.
Sure.
I'm probably wrong. It says that if a person has a headache, what should they do? They should learn some Torah. They should learn some really difficult piece of Torah. Because Tal Teir Mechayehu, the Torah has the ability of revitalizing a person's soul. Bodek and Manusis. Every time I get a headache, forget about the aspirin, the Advil, the ibuprofen. They're not my sponsors anyway. I don't have to plug them. I'm sponsored. This Torah is brought to you by God. Anyway, so... Rak she'achar kach gerem hachet. What happened? Sin caused... sin happened. We have the sin of the chet ha'egel. That before then, the world was in a state of perfection like it was prior to Chedei Tzedas. Nobody died during the 40 days that Moshe was on the mountain between Matan Torah and Chedei Egel. The world was in a state of absolute perfection. But what happened is the same thing that happened after Adam did the sin with Chedei Tzedas. Is that he became more of a physical person. It says that when Adam was in Gan Eden, so it says that he, how tall was he? How tall was Adam Arishan in the Garden of Eden? 500 years walk. He was a big old boy. They don't even grow him like that in Texas. And then with the Chet Eitz Hadas, he shrunk down. This is normal size. I don't know what normal size was at that point. You know, it says that people generally were a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Okay. And in addition to that, but not only did he go down in stature, it says that Adam HaRishon, we discussed this in chapter 2, that Adam HaRishon, his entire body was covered with a fingernail-like material.
Right.
And when he did the sin, so it all fell off except for the end of his fingers and toes. And it's explained, Rizal explains, the reason is because the fingernails are an expression of Maestri Midos. They're a byproduct of emotion. And before the sin, he was like in the groove. And so his body could generate enough nail material to cover his whole entire body. He did the sin, his body couldn't. He didn't have the wherewithal spiritually to manifest, and so the rest of his nail stuff just fell off of his body, and he was left with just fingernails and toenails. So when the Jewish people were standing by Har Sinai for 40 days, I don't think they grew nails per se, nor did they take off their clothes, as was what was going on with Adam HaRishon. But the world was in a state of perfection. There was nobody sick, there was nobody blind, there was nobody lame, there was no war going on. Okay, and it didn't make the newspaper because what kind of business is this? Nobody died today, it's not going to make the newspaper. You know? So, so what happens in these Gashmu, Heim v'ha'ilam, Ad Eis Keitz Hayamim. Okay, what happened is we are feeling the effect of Chet Ha'egel, until this day. Because what happened is it brought us back down to earth, you might say. People started dying again, people started fighting again, mucked up the world, and it's been our job now to clean up the world, as was the case with after Adam did his thing. Adam, I think I mentioned this before, Adam was told you can go back into the Garden of Eden. Do you remember talking such a thing? He says all you gotta do is clean up the mess that you made. So what did Adam do? He introduced evil into the world. All he had to do was get rid of all the evil and go back into Gan Eden. And the 10 ensuing generations until the flood were told, if you clean up the world, you can go back into Gan Eden. But the job was similar to, one of the names of evil is Klippa, a shell. So it'd be akin to, what did Adam do? Is he cracked open an egg. And not only did he get some of the shell in it, and you're told you could eat the egg if you get the little bit of shell out, he took the shell and ground it up into a powder and mixed it up into the egg and cooked it, and now is told, take out all the little pieces of eggshell and then you can eat the egg.
Yeah, have a good time.
That's basically what our job of getting rid of Klippa has been for the last 5,771 years. And we're told at this point, well, you know, the Friedrich Rebbe said we did it already. We're just waiting for it. But we're waiting on Hashem at this point. Sha'az, what's going to be then at the end of days? Sha'az is dachach neshamay, gashmi is taguf v'ha'olam. Then what's going to happen is the world and the bodies are going to be purified. And then the body in the physical world will no longer be a contradiction to spirituality. But on the contrary, the body will be a vehicle for conveying spirituality. And we'll see the accomplishments of all the mitzvahs that we did, all the physical things that we did, we'll say, oh, I got it, I see. That's what's going to be when Mashiach comes. It says, how are we going to know Mashiach comes? It says, you're not going to need to turn on CNN to hear the news of Mashiach's arrival. You're just going to look at the world and you're going to see it's no longer a contradiction to Elokus. You're going to know, oh, look at that. There's infinity contained in the three dimensions. It must be Mashiach. What else could it be? And from this great advantage, this great light, which was given to the Jewish people by the fact that we get to do 613 commandments, this light reaches out to the darkness of the nations. That says the nations will travel by your light. The house of Jacob, let's go, and let's go. Bo'ar Hashem, by the light of Hashem. Uksiva nigla kavod Hashem v'ra'a kol basa yachdav. It says that the glory of Hashem will be revealed, and all flesh will see together. That's talking about Jews and non-Jews. Kidiksiv lavoya v'nikudus hatzarim isafin hisaloyim ifinei pachad Hashem v'ahera goyin Hashem v'goymer k'moshakos v'efiyah bahadur goyin uzecha kol yeshri tevel atzarecha. He really goes to town in the last bit over here with these last pesukim. As it says, and you'll go forth into the holes in the rocks and into the splits in the boulders for the fear of Hashem and the glory of His Majesty, which we will see then. And as we daven, that Hashem should shine forth in splendor and the excellence of your might upon all the inhabitants of the earth. And there's a verse that the Rebbe used to quote, V'ze'ivdu eschem b'shechem echod. And all nations will serve Hashem with one shoulder. Meaning, when Mashiach comes, it's not going to be just the Jews' Mashiach. This is where we differ from all other philosophies. Mashiach is coming for the world. Mashiach is coming for to tell us that whatever we did up till now, we're done, we're finished, we have nothing more to do. Our job is done, the world is complete, and the world will be complete for everybody. What's going to happen, though, is those people don't merit to be alive when Mashiach comes. They won't be alive. But the world will be around. As will be we'll have nations of the world, we'll have Jews, and hopefully we'll live happily ever after. And the next class will be in Jerusalem, and Mashiach will be teaching you.